My name's Justin. I'm a pessimist in a strange world, scouring Israel to find hope, inspiration, and goodness. Or, in other words, modern-day Lamed Vavnikim, 36 righteous souls who can show us the way. The Lamed Vav Tzaddikim is a tale built on the idea that there are 36 anonymous, really good people who hide in the shadows but step forward when we need them most. This is my journey to find wonder and goodness in our once magical world. We live in a world where everyone and their mother's dry cleaning lady has a podcast. That's part of the reason I tortured myself when starting 36. Did I really have something to say? Would I actually be good at interviewing strangers? Would this be something unique, special? Well, if you think the answer is no, thank you for listening anyway. But everyone has a podcast now. Who did it when you really had to fight for downloads, fight for listeners, and fight to build a community of people who would likely never meet one another or meet you? With that in mind, I decided to sit down with Israel's first podcaster, a man who spent more time explaining what a podcast was in the early days than promoting his own work. This is my conversation with Israel's first podcaster, Ron Levy. So you must love talking.
Not so much, actually. No. I'm more into writing.
Right. Interesting. So tell me about the first podcast that you ever listened to and just bring me through that day.
I think it was probably sometime in 2005, relatively early. Back then, I was an electronics engineer, commuting back and forth to work each day, looking for something interesting to listen to, all the driving. There was nothing interesting on the radio most of the time. I don't follow politics and stuff, so I was looking for alternatives, and I came across a podcast. Nobody knew what that was. Certainly, I didn't know. And it was a podcast called Tips from the Top Floor, and it was about photography. And back then, like 15 years ago, 17 years ago, I was a freak for digital photography. Digital cameras just became a thing. So I fell in love with that podcast immediately. It was some German guy, a photographer, who, as the name suggests, did his show from the top floor of his house. Little did I know that a few years later, I would be doing the same for my top floor in my house. And I realized for the first time that, this guy, he's no radio personality. He's just a photographer. Yet he is creating something that people all over the world, including myself in Israel, are listening to and enjoying. So that kind of opened my eyes to the possibility.
Where did you listen to it on?
Good question, because back then we didn't have smartphones. So I downloaded it from my desktop to a small MP3 player and then connected the MP3 player to a portable FM transmitter.
I have no idea what any of these things are.
Exactly. This is archaeology, man.
But
this
I believe you.
Podcasting archaeology. So the FM transmitter transmitted the podcast via radio waves to the car's radio. it's obvious why people didn't listen to podcasts back then, because it was so much of a hassle. But being an engineer myself, I had no problem with technology, so I managed. Back then, I was an author. My hobby was writing books about science and technology. But about 2006, my first book came out, and it wasn't a big success. It was bought in like a few thousand copies or such, and it went off the shelf pretty fast, which got me thinking whether that media, the medium of books, is what's best for me. And I started thinking about podcasting just as a way, as a sort of continuation of me writing books. I said to myself, well, I could always narrate my books or something like that. And then I started a small podcast about computer games, just with a good friend of mine. But I was lucky. And like within, I think it was early 2007, maybe, or middle 2007, the first iPhones came out. And then the first Android phones followed very soon after. and my second podcast, which was called Making History.
In Hebrew or
in
English?
In Hebrew. Okay. Still in Hebrew. Came into the world at roughly that point in time. So I was lucky that people were discovering podcasts. I mean, it was still a very niche media. People were actually discovering media while I was starting to get the hang of it. Surprisingly, it caught and it kind of exploded. So within like 3-4 months after I started the podcast, I was already getting like tens of emails and stuff, and people were enjoying the podcast. And it was totally unexpected because I was pretty sure that nobody would listen to the show, except maybe a few tens of people here and there.
Do you remember the day when you realized that people beyond just the tens and tens of people and maybe hundreds and tens of thousands of people were listening? Do you remember that day?
I think the first time I realized that something is really happening is when I decided to do my first listeners meeting, you know, get together of the listeners. I think it was 2008 or something like that. I don't remember. And until then, I had no real idea how many people are listening to the show. I knew download numbers roughly. So I knew there were probably a couple of hundred of people that were listening or something like that. But I didn't know how many people would actually come to meet me in person. There's a difference between, you know, listening to somebody and actually getting into a car and driving to meet somebody you don't know. But I think there were about 20 people who showed up for that meeting. I remember saying to myself, wow, 20 people who actually, they don't know me. I'm nobody. And yeah, 20 people came to see who's the guy that's speaking into their ears. And I think it was like 150 people the year after that, which was like 150 people. That's something that I would never have thought of possible.
It's an Ashkenazi wedding.
Probably, yeah. It was not that far from my wedding, yeah.
Beyond the show just being good and the topic being right on, why do you think these people keep coming back and more people keep listening? And then more people, as you said, get into their car to meet this guy they've never met or this guy that they met last year at the coffee shop. What do you think drives them to feel like an active participant in this virtual community?
That's a good question. I think it's something in the media itself, in podcasting, because, you know, when we're watching a television show or listening to, you know, old FM radio, most of us, I think, we don't get the sense that the host of the show really connects with us on an intimate level, on, you know, a personal level. It's their job. They work at being a host or a radio personality. Most of them. They might enjoy their work, but it's still work. But when it comes to podcasting, I think maybe because of the, you know, kind of the fringe origins of podcasting, the indie origins, there is a sense that, you know, if you and I are sitting together and talking about something in a podcast, that's probably because we're really into it. I mean, if I'm doing a podcast about science and technology, which is my thing, I'm doing it not because somebody's paying me to do that, and because I've got extreme passion for that topic. And every podcast host is the same, basically, because it's still indie. It's still indie in the sense.
Unless it's a bad one.
Unless it's a bad one. And, you know, when big media corporations try to take their first steps into podcasting, that's what they get wrong most of the time. They don't make it personal enough. So when somebody is listening to me talking about the subject that I enjoy very much and they enjoy very much, there's an immediate connection. Maybe we don't know each other personally, but you definitely get the sense that if the two of you would meet, drink some coffee together, and, you know, and talk, there's a good probability you'll be good friends. I think that's the secret of podcasting. That feeling that there is a real connection with the host. And I feel that with the podcast I listen to. I mean, I very much enjoy, for example, Hardcore History. Dan Caroline, a big history buff, his podcast is amazing, millions of listeners. And I had the pleasure to interview him for my podcast. And I mean, the conversation was really good because we are both history nerds. He's a history nerd, you know, from head to toe. And we are both that way. So we really enjoy the conversation, talking about what we love. When I interview somebody who's completely different from me, it's not the same chemistry.
Yeah.
So it's really there.
Something that I think is so interesting is that, you know, since 2006, you know, we could say maybe podcasting took off 2015, 2014, 2017.
In the States. I think originally it came about only like 3 years ago.
Yeah. And then, of course, 2020 comes and there's a huge bump. And I'm looking at this like trajectory. If you had like a graph of downloads globally in all podcasts per day, and then you ran that across some metric for polarization in conversation, in society, in politics, in culture, you would think that the more people that are listening to podcasts, listening to others who are not themselves, the less polarized or maybe we would be. And the opposite has happened. Maybe it's because people are listening to podcasts that reinstate their own biases and beliefs. But I was wondering if you could speak to that. You know, you said you're not a political person. I'm asking more from the social aspect. Like, am I the only one who thinks it's fascinating that in our world where everyone is a commentator and has an opinion, so many people are listening to millions of podcasts?
I think you're right. Podcasts, much like social media and blogs, because it's a person-to-person kind of communication, it is polarizing. I mean, if you're listening to a far-right podcast, if you're far-right in your orientation, you'll listen to a far-right podcast. Far-left, same thing. I mean, I don't like it. As I mentioned, I'm not really into politics, but it is the way that it is in the internet in general. When we're talking about the internet in general, we're talking about democratization of content creation. Up until 20 years ago, information came from, you know, centralized sources, TV stations, newspapers, whatever. Now information comes from all over, from different sources. And now we have to choose which sources we want to engage with. And sadly, human nature as it is, means that we probably envelop ourselves in our own bubbles. I personally do that. I mean, I listen only to the stuff that interests me, and I don't listen to podcasts which I don't find the topics interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm missing. I know that if it was like it was 20 years ago, I'm old enough to remember, then I would have been exposed to maybe different views, different topics, you know, because I didn't have that much control about the sources of information. Now that I have, I'm aware that it's not a good thing. So I try consciously sometimes to break it, you know, not to block people in social media because I don't like what they're saying and stuff like that. Maybe read sometimes, you know, blogs, which I tend usually not to. But I think that's probably in the long term that won't be helpful, really.
Right.
I'm optimistic.
And what do you think that, you know, radio shows were a big thing for a while. I don't think it's a big leap to then say 2006 kind of happened and there were a few podcasts. Now there are way too many podcasts and it's too much content. And then 20 years from now, if you're a futurist, let's put on your futurist hat. Will we be meeting each other in virtual coffee shops with like virtual headsets with AI deciding what our fake coffee order is based on our personality? I think what drives all of these different things is the need for community, especially thinking about that coffee shop. You know, in my head, it's a New England coffee shop and it's cold and they open, but I know it was in Israel and it was probably hot. But where do you think that drive to be a part of something will lead the consumer? And where do you think the market will meet that consumer?
Wow, it's so difficult to try and predict things nowadays because everything is changing so fast in terms of technology. I think the basic change that we underwent through in media was the ability of the audience to choose the content that they want to consume. Things like Netflix and video on demand and stuff. And podcasting is just, you know, a continuation of that trend. Back in FM radio days, you had to listen to what was on. Maybe you could switch stations, but not there weren't too many stations. Now with Spotify and Apple Music and podcasts, you can choose whatever you like. That is here to stay. That concept is not going away because the technology enables it. Maybe VR is in the cards, but I'm not that optimistic about that technology. I think it still needs maybe a sort of a killer app, because right now, putting, you know, goggles on over your head and kind of disengaging from the world is not a good experience from my personal experience. So I don't see that happening in the coming years. Who knows? Maybe people would be able to transmit content straight from the phones to people around them. So maybe you would be sitting in a train or something and kind of enjoying content tailored for that train as it is on the road. I mean, it's obviously sounds silly when you say that, but who would have thought, if you would have told me 20 years from now, me and you would be sitting here in this room and people all over the world would be listening to us, and neither you nor I are experienced in, you know, radio production. We're not in a studio. 20 years ago, that would have seemed equally as silly. Who knows what the future holds?
Have you ever heard someone speak about your podcast, like in passing, or see someone's phone listening to it, and you're kind of in total anonymity?
Yeah, it happened, I think, a couple of times. I mean, people usually don't know my face, so I'm mostly anonymous until I open my mouth. When I'm taking the train, I sometimes had people were talking about the show. It happens. It's fun. I even had an occasion where I think it was walking in Tel Aviv and, you know, some street, and somebody with headphones passed me by, and then they turned back and say, "Wait a minute, you're Ran Levy? I'm listening to you right now on my headphones." So that was fun. And I have to say, I mean, back when I was writing books, I didn't have feedback that much. I mean, the book would come out, you'd get an email or two, maybe three, mostly with people are pointing at mistakes that you made because there's no other reason to write to you most of the time. And that's it. You won't get too much interaction with the audience. But with podcasts, it's completely different for some reason. I'm getting lots of email, and of course with social media, I'm getting, you know, tens of responses a day. And now I have podcasts in the United States, in English, I mean, international podcasts that I produce. So I'm getting feedback from States to Germany, to Finland, to Kenya, to India. And that's amazing. I mean, the transition from becoming, you know, a small-time author in Hebrew in a small country to becoming a podcaster with audience all over the world is fascinating. I wouldn't have dreamt of that it could be possible.
How many people listen a week?
I mean, now I've got 5 podcasts that I host personally, and I also co-founded, that's something that we haven't mentioned yet, but after my first show, it's called Making History, that I described to you, started taking off, I had to, after 5 or 6 years, I had to quit my day job as an engineer, and I started a production company, PI Media, with a business partner, and we started a podcasting network in Israel, and then we started podcasting in English for international audiences. So now I'm the executive editor of like something like 40 to 50 podcasts. And I mean, only to the podcast that I host personally, there's probably 5, 7, 10,000 people listening a day, probably. We're talking for about months, it reaches the millions probably.
Right.
And for the network in total with all the hosts and all the podcasts, so yeah, I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of downloads per week. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Kolikovat. Really amazing.
Thank you. No, I mean, it's amazing, yeah. Not because I made it. It's because it is possible, because you have to remember, I'm only an electrical engineer. I'm a software developer. I've never went to a media school, never learned journalism. I've never been in a radio station. It's really anomalous for somebody with my background to become a successful, quote unquote, radio personality. It could only happen in our time right now, I think.
Yeah. And what do you think these tens of thousands of people a week, whatever, what do you think that they're looking for in their lives that they can't see in front of them, that they need to hear and download to listen to? And so that's one. And two, what do you want to offer them? beyond just information and insights?
I think that these two questions are very linked because as a podcaster, I usually try to do content that I enjoy personally. I really think that authenticity matters in podcasting. You've got to convince the audience that you care about the topic that you're talking as much as they do. If not, the show is not going to be successful. So I think that what people are looking for is somebody who's into the stuff that they're into, whether it be, you know, building model railways, or if somebody is into computer games, they want somebody else who's into the same hobbies, the same ideas, the same way they think, except maybe somebody who is knowledgeable that can maybe teach them stuff or expose them to different ideas, whatever. And they can't really get that from the old media. When we were talking about newspapers and TV stations, whatever, if you were into, say, building railway models, how many minutes a day would railway modeling get on a normal TV station, say CNN or NBC or whatever? Zero? That doesn't give you what you want if you're into that hobby. With podcasting, and of course, if you go even back with YouTube videos and such, that's possible. That's why, I mean, I think that podcasting is much closer in essence to YouTube than to old radio. People tend to think of podcasting as kind of the new radio. But in reality, radio, FM radio, so different in mentality, in its basic way of working from podcasting, that podcasting much more, it resembles much more YouTube videos. Because also in YouTube videos, you get the sense that the person talking to you enjoys the content and has the passion to the topic as much as you have. That's, I think, that what separates the old media and the new media. And that's what people are looking for when they're tuning into podcasting.
Where did you get your passion from? Not only of podcasting, but for, you could say, community of sharing ideas, of writing, because you're electrifying with it. Like you are authentically passionate. And I think that probably is at the core of your success. I know it
probably,
is.
Yeah. And I have no control over it. I mean, you know, looking back, at me at age like 9, 10, 11, back then, of course, no internet, basically no computers, I would go to the public library and open the encyclopedias, and I would copy interesting stuff from the encyclopedia, go back home, and tell them to my sister, my smaller sister. So
did she care?
Nope. But I didn't care that she doesn't care. But what's the difference between what I'm doing now to what I did then? Basically, no difference. I always enjoyed reading stuff, learning new stuff, and then explaining it to somebody else. So podcasts and writing are just a natural continuation. The passion is real. I mean, I did it when I was 9, so it's probably a big part of myself. The only difference is that with podcasting, it gives me the tools to reach audience which I would probably never have been able to reach in, you know, older days. For example, I've got a show in English about cybersecurity called Malicious Life. And I started it like 5 years ago. And back then my English was, I mean, I always read in English, but I rarely spoke English. So my accent was rather heavy. So it took me a long while to practice my accent and sound more professional when I'm speaking English. But when I did it and did a podcast the same way I did my Hebrew podcast, it was successful again and it became number 9, I think, in iTunes technology chart a few weeks back. And that's amazing for me because it's against all odds in a very realistic way. I'm an Israeli. I'm talking to American audience. I've got a noticeable Hebrew accent. Plus, my fluency probably is not as good as most native speakers. And yet, only because I have the passion, in that case, for cybersecurity, which is also something that I'm very interested in. My third book was about it. Only because I'm passionate about it, plus because I've been writing for so long, so I know how to tell a good story, that was enough to make the podcast go to, you know, to be like one of the top 20 technology podcasts in the world for English speakers. It's not the way the world worked yeah. back then. What was the chance? What's the chance 20 years ago that some, I don't know, Indian guy would be a popular science explainer to US audience? And now with YouTube, it happens all the time. So that's an amazing development in human history, which I think is why I'm optimistic about the future.
So where does that lead us?
I think it leads us to better places. Really, I mean, everybody is very aware of the polarization that happens. But I tend to think of the other side of the coin, which is, say, for example, if you take Israel as an example, Israel is polarized the same way that the US is polarized between the left and the right. We've got our own polarization right here.
Some could also say the same way, to a lesser degree, religious and secular in America.
Exactly. It's the same cultural changes that are happening in the States, in Britain even, are happening in Israel as well. Yet, I feel cultural affinity, you might say, a big cultural affinity to the culture in the West Coast of the United States. Lots of Israelis who work in the high-tech industry, and that's where I grew up in my career as an engineer, are kind of very much influenced by Western and specifically Californian culture, which means that if I come to California, when I visit California, or if I'll visit probably places in India where there's like pockets of Westernization, and maybe places in China as well, the cultural affinity between these different peoples would be much stronger than it would have been in earlier times. So right now we are very polarized locally, but the internet enables us to create communities which are transcending borders in a sense. This is maybe part of why the polarization is so powerful right now, because the basic cohesion within countries, which was based on local geographic affinity, people are living together in the same cities, is now becoming weaker, perhaps, than the cultural affinity that the internet enables us across the globe. You know, I could move to San Francisco tomorrow morning, and I would probably feel at home, much more than, say, if I would have moved to Jerusalem, for example, which is a kind of a weird transition period. And I think that overall, we'd probably get a much better cohesion of humanity as a whole. Less cohesion, perhaps, in the local environment. But with local environments, I think we could probably sort things out. I mean, we're all living in the same country, so we'll figure it out how to work in the end. But wars, we do wars with people from other countries, people before we didn't know. They seemed alien to us. Now, when I'm talking to somebody from, I don't know, Lebanon, some of the guys in Lebanon are very Western-like in their way of thinking. They grew up on Western television, Western music. If he likes Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin and I like Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin, so now we can start talking, you know? Something that we didn't have before.
It's interesting. Maybe I'm still a pessimist. Yeah, I'm still a pessimist, but you're a very nice guy. My real last question is, I think there's kind of a broader story to be told in that day when you're listening to your first podcast, getting the big box and the cassette and this and downloading it, this whole chain of events that like sounds like what I had to do to install my dryer and washing machine.
Probably.
But you still did it anyway. There was always a chance you could just say, screw it, I don't want to do it. But you went through this motion and you pressed play. And little did you know at the time that your life's trajectory would change dramatically. Personally, professionally, intellectually, academically, all these things. Had you not pressed play, who knows where you'd be. If you could tell yourself one thing sitting in that car, maybe before or after you press play, or while you're getting all these strange archaic devices in place, what would you tell yourself?
Buckle up. You're into one hell of a ride. I mean, the last 15 years have been amazing. My life changed completely. 15 years ago, I was, you know, an engineer working in a cubicle in a big corporation. Now I'm a business owner talking to thousands of people all over the world. And they're talking to me, and I got to interview Steve Wozniak, a childhood hero of mine.
Wow.
And got to meet interesting people, and I got invited to be in, you know, open heart surgery and record stuff underground in security places. I mean, the amount of experiences that I had,
right?
That's something that nobody could have. Probably, if somebody would have told me that's going to be my future, I would have laughed in his face.
But what would you say to yourself now? Buckle up.
Yeah, I wouldn't change it. I mean, it's been one hell of an adventure. But it was also difficult. People who become successful in the internet, it tends to be overnight. In my experience, it was like over 2 or 3 years, because podcasting goes a bit slower. And it was back then when social media wasn't still a thing. It took some time, but it's still relatively fast. 2-3 years from somebody who was totally unknown to somebody who's now recognizable in the street sometimes is a big change for somebody to go through in his mid-30s or something like that. So it was very difficult in terms of how do I rearrange my life around this new success. I still had a job that I had to do because podcasting didn't bring me money. So I kind of worked during the day and was a podcaster during the night, which meant I got hardly any sleep for a long time, which made my life in terms of, you know, emotional and family and stuff, things became very complicated. I ended up being divorced. I mean, it was not a joyful ride all the time. I paid some prices. But since you only have one life left, I would still do that again. Maybe a bit smartly this time. But really, you can't really change. That's the way the world works. If it happens again, it will probably be the same struggle as before. That's the way that things work, if you need to do that. It's not easy.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Thank you so much for joining us. And where can people find your podcast?
So I'm guessing, I mean, for our English-speaking audience, Malicious Life is probably the best choice. You can find it on all podcasting apps, be it iTunes, Spotify, whatever. And for the most sciencey kind of audience, Curious Minds is another podcast I hosted. It's now inactive. But I already have some, I think, 50 episodes on air. So search for Curious Minds and you'll get to hear my accent before it got better.
Nice.
I hope it won't be too too difficult to understand.
I am subscribing now and listening the second after you leave. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
If I had passed Ron on the street, I would never have known who he was. Would have never known of the intellectual communities he'd built through sharing his thoughts, his voice, his commentaries, and his shows with this virtual world. He left my apartment and headed back to his office. An office now occupied by dozens of workers, podcasters, creators, ad salesmen, and beyond. A true business with hundreds of thousands of listeners across the world a week, across dozens of podcasts. And yet, I couldn't help but think about Ron in his car all those years ago, figuring out the contraption necessary to listen to a podcast. It's easy to find interesting people once they've arrived, once they've already built something. But what about Ron in his car all those years back? What if he'd given up? Maybe his listeners, especially in those early days, needed him. I would probably venture to say they still do. In my eyes, someone who provided community for dozens of people years ago, before it was chic, before it was cool, could actually be Alamed Vavnik. Or maybe he's just a super interesting person and a good person and a man who brings people together. And maybe, some days, that should be enough. even for this podcast. Thanks for joining me on 36. This podcast is hosted by me, Justin Hayat. Our managing producer is Sarah Shemla. Our executive producer is Attila Samfalvi, and our editor is Robert Scarmuccia. This is a production of Soul Shop and sponsored by B'nai Zion. Please rate and review this podcast in your podcast app of choice and share it with your friends, your butcher, and your shadchan. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again soon.